podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the It's All Cobblers to Me preview show. I'm Danny Brothers and I'm here to look ahead to a Good Friday trip to Reading. Our hosts have had a tumultuous season once again, with fans up and down the country calling for owner Dai Young to sell the club before it's too late. So much going on, so much to talk about. Joining us to talk about all that and to somehow get some sense of what might happen on the pitch as well is Matt from the Elm Park Royals podcast. How are you doing, Matt?
Not too bad, Danny. Not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, all good, thanks. It's like I said, it's just a rough time for everyone involved with Reading. So I can't imagine we can dive too much into stuff that's going on off on the pitch. We'll try to in the second half of the pod. But there's no real other place to start than other than naming and going through everything to do with the man that we shouldn't even be mentioning. We don't want to mention his name. Which I already have, but we'll come into it, what he's done to the club since he's been in. As a very quick timeline, took over Reading quite a few days before your championship playoff final, 2017. Since then, relegation to the third tier for the first time in 22 years, a total of now 18 points deducted across the seasons, 5 years of transfer embargoes, multiple missed HMRC payments, cost-cutting, redundancies, no hotels before away games, pre-match meals that have been microwaved, not proper meals, not proper food, the CEO selling your most valuable assets behind the back of the manager, and no kind of contact with the outside world, no contact with the public at all. You must be absolutely sick of hearing his name. For anyone who's been living under a rock, could you just give us an update as to your feelings through this whole process as Reading fans and whereabouts you're at with the sale of the club right now, or potential sale of it? Yeah. It's a lot to cover, but...
I mean, it's a really good summary kind of the timeline kind of you gave there for the listeners. Yeah, it's not been a short process. You know, this hasn't been kind of one season of just the owner just deciding, oh, finally, I'm just going to pull the plug. It might have been, I guess, the final straw that's kind of broke the camel's back. But it's just been the saddest demise over the period of 6-7 years. And realistically, it didn't actually start with He Who Shan't Be Named, who came in. You know, we've had ownership problems really since the Premier League days when Anton Zagarevich first came in. He was, I guess, the first person that set that off. Medeski had to come in, clear tax bills to save the club essentially. Then the Ties came in, didn't have any money, ultimately sold obviously to the Parasite. And I think we should have known when he took over halfway through I think it was on about 55 minutes of the second half against Fulham in that semi-final when he took over, that it was probably going to be trouble. Because who takes over during a game and it's announced during a game? It was the weirdest takeover. But yeah, from there, death by a thousand cuts doesn't even cover it, seemingly. We had all the trouble, obviously, in the championship, multiple managers, nothing, no stability, ludicrous investments made in just very weird places, seemingly vendettas against other owners. He had a bit of a spat, I think, with the Birmingham owner and ended up trying to steal players from that ownership. I think George Puskas, that we signed for silly money, 8 million, that's because Birmingham were going to sign him, and the owner was just like, no, I'm going to throw about 4 million more than what you wanted. It just mismanagement on the grandest of scales, and it's just reached a point where the plug has been well and truly pulled. We've never had any communication from them, the owner or the CEO, really, across their 6-7 year tenure. And it's just got to a point where seemingly every single week, Reading fans are wondering, are we actually going to have a club, you know, next season to come back to, or even finish this season with? Because you look at the outstanding payments, the shortfalls. There was a shortfall of it was about £1 million, I think, that was noted back at the start of March. And that was the shortfall for March. It seems like HMRC has been paid somehow, some way. I know Select Car Leasing, our sponsors, they get a lot of stick for the stadium name, but what they have done to almost keep the club going, loaning money, paying bills, paying wages in some instances, has just been unbelievable, quite frankly. So maybe they paid HMRC. We don't really know. There's rumours of takeovers, but we've had about seemingly 101 different people that have come in being close. Some have been legit and some have been on the verge of exclusivity. And the owner has seemingly done everything in his power then to make exclusivity not happen, even though he wants to sell and kind of get everything through. It's just been the biggest circus act and just clown show, really, I think, in history. And I think every Reading fan just wants it to be over to anybody. I don't really think many people really care who at this point, because ultimately, if the owner stays here, we're not going to have a club next year. That's the reality of it, I think, for Reading fans. So I think we would just take anyone, and it's not a high bar. Even if an owner came in and was a 2-3 out of 10, I think Reading fans would probably take that right now, which seems crazy, I know, because we'll probably then be here again in 2-3 years. But that's the situation of desperation, really, that Reading are in and Reading fans are in at the moment. Because it's just to be that close to not having your club anymore is just heartbreaking. Because you talk about, you know, everything that football brings you, friendships, memories, weekends, you know, weekends away, etc. It's crazy to think that might not be there.
Yeah, the thing from the outside, one of the worst bits about it is that he just doesn't seem to care at all about that kind of thing. Like, nothing about this says he cares anything about the football club, the community, the fans. There's nothing about any of this that makes me think this guy is a football person. It's just, there's such a disconnect. And like you said, no interviews, no communication. Mm-hmm. And then we come on to the last couple of weeks about the training ground, which I think, am I right in saying that he built, or his money built Bearwood Park in the first place?
With Bearwood, I think John Medeski first bought the land about 10 years ago and established it for the club, but we never had the money to fully develop it. So that was one thing that Zingarevich, when he came in, he said, we'll develop Bearwood, we'll develop the training ground. But obviously he had no money, so that didn't happen. The Ties didn't have the money, so it didn't happen. The owner came in and then he said he was going to develop it, and that was one of the first big things that he did. And to be fair to him, he delivered on that. You know, it took a bit longer, I think, than anticipated, but that's probably the only good thing, really, I think, he's put into the club, you know, over his time here. And, you know, you talk about him not being a football person. He's had two other clubs on his books in KSV Roeselare in Belgium, top tier team in Belgium 10 years ago, relegated to the third tier, then liquidated. Mm-hmm. He then also had Beijing Rennes over in China. Little bit of a different situation because of obviously what happened with the Chinese Super League over there, but liquidated in 2020 or 21, I think it was, from memory. To be fair, none of this happened before he took over Reading. So people say about, oh, how is an owner allowed to come in who's liquidated two clubs? They weren't liquidated before he came in. They were liquidated whilst he was at Reading FC. But you look at the trends, and especially with the situation with KSV Roeselare, and the similarities are just scarily similar, you know, and that's where all the fears have come from, because we knew, I think, from January, when the CEO was selling players behind the managers and Mark Bowen, the head of football operations, back, we knew that they were, sounds crazy to say it, but open to asset stripping the club. So I think we always knew that the training ground would be sold, or the stadium would be sold, if there was a person that came along, or a group that came along wanting to buy it. But then to put out the statement saying that, yeah, we're open to selling the club, basically saying in public, yes, we're open to asset stripping the club, because the training ground was the last remaining asset that was part of, you know, the Reading FC Holdings group, is quite extraordinary. It's not the greatest PR strategy, not one that I would particularly go after if that's what I wanted to do. If I wanted to asset strip something, I wouldn't exactly go about advertising it. And then to have 4 or 5 days later news that apparently an agreement has been reached for it to be sold, when you've been trying to sell the football club for 8-9 months seemingly, if not longer, to then have 4 or 5 days since announcing about the training ground to then selling that. It's just ridiculous when you think about it, how close they'd been on so many times to selling the club, jeopardizing that thing, or jeopardizing those sales, then to just have something pushed through seemingly at breakneck speed. Yeah, was just crazy. And the wordings as well. I mean, yeah, I don't want to get too much into the Wickham side of it, but they were trying to portray themselves as kind of the saviors of Reading FC. The reality was that I think that the money that they were going to stump up originally to keep the club going, in inverted commas, that had to be sent, I believe, or I think it was leaked, that was going to be going directly to Dye. So it wouldn't have even seen the club. You know, and but when you see all this happening, and that's why all the fears around liquidation were there, because you've seen the history of the guy at previous clubs, what he's done, what's happening now at Reading FC. That's where the fears really have come from and really brewed from.
Yeah. So you mentioned the training grounds there. How much did it hurt that it was Wickham, that it was another football club coming along and putting that bid in and doing that to you, like, as fans? How difficult was that to take when you heard that news?
It was very difficult. And, you know, I think Reading have never had any rivalry with Wickham, to be fair, because we've never realistically been in the same division as them. I think we've played them, 14, 15 times across our entire history. You know, there's not the history there of playing Swindon or playing Oxford, you know, so they're not really rivals in that sense. But it was more the way that it was, that they went about it. And then the way that they then tried to portray themselves, portraying themselves as the heroes, the saviors, you know, we're doing, basically we're trying to do Reading a solid here by taking the training ground off you. It's like, no, there was deals that were in the pipeline. There was two parties, I think, there that were, again, verging on exclusivity, seemingly, who then pulled out because the training ground was now no longer available. So then them coming in and saying, oh, no one wanted to buy Reading FC with the training ground. It's too expensive. It's like, well, rubbish. Look at what's been there. We've had multiple people that have been there and wanting to buy the club. There's been one problem in the sale of the club, and that's the idiot at the very top. Idiot's probably far too kind, but I'm not going to use terminology that I'll probably regret on here. it's just that had been the big blocker all the way through, and continues to be the blocker, really. The man at the very top seemingly wants to sell, but does everything in his power not to sell. But yeah, to have your last kind of tangible asset seemingly taken away from you, it's just heartbreaking, utterly heartbreaking. And like, clubs can come back from that. You know, Wigan, Bolton have been prime examples of it. Other teams as well, where, you know, they've had to rebuild from the bottom. But it was just so weird how it all came about. And, you know, you think then, again, trying to be respectful to kind of Wickham, you think, how are they going to be able to, like, Reading have struggled to keep Bearwood going. That's a fact, because it's a ridiculous training ground, really, for the third tier. It's not a League One training ground. It's not a Championship training ground. It's a Premier League standard ground. You then wonder, well, how are they going to be able to maintain that? You know, when you think of probably the possible income levels that Wickham have compared to Reading. Reading's isn't, you know, brilliant by any stretch of the imagination. It's not a Derby or a Sunderland, for example. But yeah, there were so many different questions. But thankfully, you know, that most of them have been, the deal for the training ground has seemingly been kind of put on hold, or hopefully completely scuppered, obviously with the planning permission that we're able to unearth with the Sell Before We Die campaign and help from Woking and Borough Council.
Yes, there was some protests at Adams Park last week as well, when it was announced, wasn't there, on the Friday, I think it was. What was that like? Was it quite peaceful? Was there both sets of fans chatting to one another? How did that kind of go?
Well, the Wickham fans were seeming very annoyed because we did a lot of vandalism there, of stickering their Adams Park sign, which seemingly they were very unhappy about. But that was about it. That was the tastiest part of it, I'd say. Yeah. There was a couple of Wickham fans that were there. There was a father and a son that came along that that was very nice to see. There wasn't really any hostilities. It was more of just a real sad evening, to be honest. There was quite a morbid atmosphere, really at it. It was nice to be there and nice to actually just, you know, try and get the exposure and the coverage, because realistically that's what you want when you're doing protests. You need to get the message across, you need to get it out there, and make things uncomfortable, which seemingly listening to some podcasts that Rob Coag has done afterwards, the fan pressure really kind of actually added up to them pulling out of the deal. They think they could have got around the planning permission issues that were there and unearthed, but the fan pressure and everything, I think, you know, told. And that's what those protests are about. You know, we saw it with the Super League, we've seen it with Reading FC again this season, with fan protests just trying to put as much spotlight as possible on these people that are seemingly dead set on killing clubs, putting as much spotlight on them to make it as uncomfortable as possible. But yeah, you know, when you're a football fan, you never want to go and protest. You know, you don't want to do it on a Sunday, you don't want to do it on a Friday night, you don't want to do it at any point. You just want to enjoy supporting your club, go through the highs, go through the lows, and just enjoy it. You don't want to have this sideshow on. No football fan wants to do that. It's like the pitch invasion. No fan goes to a game, wants to abandon a game, call off a game. It's just crazy that it gets to this stage, but that's the levels of kind of desperation really that the club's in, unfortunately.
Yeah, we're recording this on Tuesday, right before another protest from Reading fans, the Sell Before We Die group, at Wembley for the England friendly against Belgium. Kind of acting as a reminder, really, that all of the kind of superstars on show, they wouldn't stand a chance without clubs from lower down the pyramid, like yourselves, like Birmingham for Jude Bellingham, like Watkins at Exeter, and fans at every club also, just to be able to see that they're all of them, like whatever club they support, just one bad owner really away from the sad fate that you've suffered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's one thing we've said with Sell Before We Die. If it can happen to Reading FC, it can happen to anybody. You know, Reading aren't the biggest club by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, you look at kind of what's been built over 25, 30 years by John Medeski, and how quickly that's kind of been just torn up, ripped up and just pissed on, to be honest, by one owner. And so yeah, kind of bringing that reminder to Wembley and doing it at Wembley, significance as well of it being against Belgium, and obviously one of his other clubs that are no longer in existence, KFC Roeselare, they will probably remember that situation. Belgium fans, so hopefully we can resonate with them, get the exposure of kind of that this guy is still around football somehow. And just really kind of just hammer home that message of unity. Like you say, the football pyramid in the UK is something so special, so special. You don't really see it in many other countries, really, across the world. You know, you look at the strength of the pyramid, even when you go down international league, you know, most national league teams now are, you know, fully full-time, the majority of them are, but you look at how incredible our four professional levels are. And yeah, it's something that needs to be protected. The football regulator that's obviously coming in hopefully should help with that. We're still yet to obviously see how much level of jurisdiction they'll have, but hopefully that they'll have more than the EFL, because that's one thing that's been highlighted with the Reading case, is just how powerless really the EFL are. People say they're not fit for purpose and that, but realistically they don't have the power to remove owners. They don't have the power to do anything on that side of things, and that's the frustration, because you look to your governing body for help, for support, for kind of that helping arm really, and the EFL just can't deliver it because they've got no powers on that side of things.
So you mentioned about the pyramid as well. I think a lot of the time the unity between sets of fans as well, like opposition fans, rival fans, even sometimes like local derby fans as well, everything can come together really quickly, and opposition fans can and have helped each other out. There's been a unity across leagues, across clubs, everything like that. Cobblers fans coming down on Friday, on Good Friday, is there anything kind of practical that we can be doing to help out, to show support, to demonstrate? Is there anything that you as Reading fans would like from Cobblers fans on Friday, or that we can do and can get involved with?
I'd probably just say keep sharing the Sell Before We Die message. Give Sell Before We Die a follow on Twitter. Keep up to date with kind of what's going on that side of things. Share the message, talk about it, push it with local press, with friends, because the more people hear about it, the more uncomfortable it gets for the people, you know, that we're trying to affect here, because that's what it's all about at the end of the day. Because money, they don't really care about, you know, when you talk about people in the levels of society where owners are, they don't really care about that side of things. The things they really care about is how they're perceived in the media and kind of everything on that side, their personal image, their personal stature, what's going to impact that. So that's why we've tried to focus so much on off the field stuff. Obviously, we've had a few things that have obviously filtered onto the pitch and kind of match day, etc. But we can't really do that anymore with suspended points deductions, etc. Now, so yeah, there's not going to be anything like that on a Saturday match day. No match will be abandoned, etc. But one thing that does always happen during the game is that it was on 16 minutes. It's now on 18 minutes. Obviously, for the points deducted, it's just stand up if you hate Dai Young, pretty much, or if you'd want Dai out. That's pretty much what Reading fans do in the game now, because we can't really do anything else. We can't do tennis balls. We can't do pitch invasions. We've kind of used those cards, I think, up at this point. Joining with that side of things, show unity on that side. To be fair, so many fans that come to the Medeski have been in solidarity on that side of things. Orient fans were, obviously, they've had their own scars. Charlton fans as well, some might say surprisingly, but, you know, that they were in support of it. And Port Vale fans were fantastic when they came to us and obviously showed us a lot of support on that side of things. So, just try and follow the Sell Before We Die campaign on Twitter. Hopefully this part of the podcast has helped kind of educate around kind of what's gone on and kind of the history, the timeline, etc., because that's massively important, and just help share the message really around it.
Yeah, definitely. I implore all Cobblers fans going down on Friday just to join in that and do as much as that as possible, be as loud as possible. Football's a community, and we've been very, very close to the edge ourselves, so we all know what it's like to be this close to extinction. So Cobblers fans, please do get involved with that and follow that on Twitter. We'll follow the campaign on Twitter. We'll share that at the end as well. Wish you so much as a club. Best of luck as well. We are so behind you. I think the footballing community is right behind you. So we just hope it all gets sorted out as quick as possible.
Fingers crossed.
We're going to take a quick break now. We'll be back after some ads to try and talk about a little bit of football. We'll be back in a sec. Welcome back to the Ipswich Cobblers to Me preview show. I'm still here with Matt from the Elm Park Royals. Matt, so hard to turn the attention to the playing side of things. But tying
this
tying
is the fun bit. This is what I'm excited for.
This is what you want to talk about. Tying into everything that we've just spoken about, how does Ruben Sellers come into things, and how's he done in the midst of all the chaos going on off the pitch?
Blimey. It's been a roller coaster, I think it's fair to say. When Ruben came in, obviously in the summer, there was all the stuff around, well, he couldn't come in until HMRC was paid in the summer. We couldn't even bring him in. So he pretty much had 2 weeks of a pre-season to try and get this squad together. He said at the time that we'll be better in the second half of the season. This first half of the season might be rocky. My God, was it rocky? You know, at times there were some factors that contributed to it. You know, there were quite a few goalkeeping errors, as I think Cobbler fans will probably remember from when we came to you guys. I think last time we played, it was a bit of just the goalkeeping disaster show, because I think the goal that we actually scored was a bit of a, oh my God, has that just happened?
Yeah, moment. Yeah. I think every goal, yeah.
but yeah, early in the season, there was lots of late losses. Lots, like, ridiculous amounts when you think about it. And it all kind of came to a head at Shrewsbury when we were 2-1 up. We were dominating that game. Shrewsbury didn't really look like scoring. When they did score, it was because we pretty much gifted them a goal. Harvey Nibbs kept it in on the byline somehow, some way, and they ended up tapping in. And then two last-minute corners just came and just, well, 92nd, 96th minute came, and we were 3-2 down. And at that point, we were 10 points adrift at the bottom of, or 10 points adrift of safety in the relegation zone. Kind of everyone was thinking, like, is Ruben the right man to take us forwards? This is worse than I think any of us kind of anticipated. We've not had a pre-season, but we wouldn't have expected to have been in that position. But he made a change kind of at that point. He went away from this 4-2-2-2 system that he was persevering with. It's similar to that Ralf Rangnick, Geigen press kind of Red Bull Leipzig formation that kind of everyone was talking about when he was at Manchester United. It was similar to that, but it was just disaster. It just did not work at all. The team looked disjointed. It just didn't look cohesive. No one really knew what they were doing. But he then changed to a 4-1-4-1. So we had a holding midfielder, Michael Craig, usually slotted into that position, holding. And from that moment, it's fortunes have seemingly massively turned around. It's weird how one little moment and a formation change can really transform a team. But from that point, the team looks more cohesive, attacking better. Defensively, we're still a bit shaky, but you're going to be shaky when you've got an 18-year-old and a 21, 22-year-old as your centre-back pairing. And I guess before January, that was an 18 and a 19-year-old that we had there. But footballing aside, what Ruben has had to deal with simply at Reading is just beyond anyone's kind of, I think, even imagination. You know, you take the footballing aspect out of it. When you look back at the start of the season, you can maybe be a bit sympathetic with kind of how things started. And see, there's probably deeper reasons really as to why, you know, you look at the injuries that we had. Sam Smith was out for the first couple of months of the season. Lewis Wing as well was out for about a month. And then I think it took him a little bit of time to really kind of find form in the team. But then everything around, you know, you think of kind of basics of what you'd expect at a football club. Meals at the training ground, travel to away games, accommodation, etc. And none of these were a thing for Reading. And then you look at all the external noise, the points deductions, how he's been able to keep the group together, I think is just unbelievable. And it's so nice seeing the upturn in form, because I think he generally is one of the nicest people around. And the fact he's stayed with it, so many managers I think would have just walked at this point with the amount of external noise, external factors that he's had to deal with at the club. So the fact he's still here and kind of still persevering with everything going on, I think is just testament to him. And I think so many fans, well, the doubters that were there earlier in the season are kind of just very much not quashed, but I'd probably almost say turned around as supporters now for him and for the team.
Yeah, a couple of points deductions in there as well. But every time you've received them, you seem to get them back fairly quickly. I think the last one you got, it was a 2-point deduction and you won a couple of days later just to completely
Stat. It's crazy that we can have this kind of stat, but Reading FC has never actually lost a game after a points deduction, which I think the years, even last year as well as, and the season before as well as this year, but I do laugh when I see a stat like that, because I think, how can that stat be a thing, first off?
But it must just be so mad for the players to come into it and so demoralising for them to be clawing it back, mm-hmm. getting up at the relegation zone, getting 4 or 5 points clear of the relegation zone, and then suddenly you're right back in the relegation battle again. Mm-hmm. To have the mentality to then go again for a third or fourth or fifth time this season to climb out of it, that shows A, amazing leadership, but B, a mental strength in the players that the top teams would be proud of. Is that something the manager's just instilled in the players, do you think?
I think so, yeah. And the characters that are there, you know, I think not enough can be said about the group of players that we've got at the moment. It's probably the most connected Reading fans have been with any team since probably the McDermott team that we went up to the Premier League with in 2011, 2012, which again is testament to this team. Because you think a team that's sitting 18th in the league how can that be compared with a team that won promotion to the Premier League? But I think it's a fair comparison, to be honest, because you look at the togetherness, you look at kind of the attitude, the mental strength, as you say, it's just, it's astonishing. I think the players deserve obviously a lot of credit to that, obviously, as well as Ruben Sellers, to be able to just keep that going and just kind of just keep focus on the football, really. You know, I guess we've had it in previous seasons. Last year was one of them where, you know, I think the team was just completely, not utterly mentally done by the last month, 2 months of the season. Kind of you saw that on the pitch. But how Ruben's been able to keep this all together, and like I say, the group together, the attitude the same, the players keep performing, you know, I think it's just testament to him and to this group, which it's an unbelievably young team as well. You know, we only had, I think it was 6 players in contract at the start of the season. We've had to bring up so many academy players. Like I say, Tyler Bindon has been fantastic, really, at centre back. He's just turned 19, I think. But this is his first season of professional football, moved across from America in the summer. Amadou Mbengue, another one. He was part of the team loosely last year, but he's 22, I think. You know, Kelvin Iyabashiman, another one, academy player. Femi Aziz, another academy player. There's so many. Gerald Dorset as well, academy player, our left back. Michael Craig, another one. There's been so many academy players that have been brought through and young players that have been brought in. Even when you look at the likes of Charlie Savage that have been brought in, you know, 20 years old, moved from Manchester, obviously, down to Reading, relocated his life. And for all these players to just keep that focus, that strength, to kind of keep going, next game, next point, keep ticking them off, I think it's just unbelievable. You know, I think it's going to be so sad seeing, obviously, some of the players probably leaving in the summer, because we'll probably have to, you know, sell a few more players in the summer to be sustainable. But yeah, I can't say enough about this team. I'd love to see what they'd be like just under normal circumstances, you know, just having the basics there. Because you think not having meals prepared for you, that's maybe 1-2% of kind of what makes up, you know, the professional lifestyle. But that 1-2%, becomes massive. You know, you talk about marginal gains and stuff and all that side of things. It's those little things that then add up and add up and add up and add up. I'd love to see, like I say, what these guys would do under normal circumstances.
Yeah, and you come into it obviously off the back of a 4-0 win over Cambridge a couple of weeks ago. Epitome of a 6-pointer. You've gone, I think you've gone 6 points clear of them, or 4 points clear of them, sorry, now 3 points clear of them. I'll get it in the end. But it's just a huge thing to go and not only beat a relegation rival, but absolutely hammer them in all the stats, in all the possession, everything like that. You've completely put them to bed. And does that kind of almost get you there, do you think, in terms of safety?
No, because we don't know what's going to happen off the pitch. Yeah. we've still got a 2-point deduction looming over us for anything that's non-paid this year. I think Reading fans have gone through, I think, the last few years now, thinking that any suspended points deduction on that side of things is going to be applied at some point. So I'd probably almost think we're still probably 2 points worse off than we are at the moment. That's just what I think Reading fans think at the moment. It brings confidence, because, you know, I think the one thing we didn't want to do was let Cambridge kind of back into the fight, give them something, give them hope. You know, I think that's been the good thing about some of the games that we've played against teams that are down there, bar Shrewsbury. You know, when we played Port Vale, we played Carlisle, we played Cambridge, and kind of put them all away quite comfortably, which is always reassuring. Because I think it kind of back on the mentality of the players, it gives them, I guess, the confidence that, you know, that they shouldn't be down there. You know, they've got enough to get over the line, you know, however it happens, you know, by hook or by crook, they can do it. You know, and I guess we've seen it all through the season with performances, you know, beating the likes of Derby. We went away to Portsmouth, and even though we lost that game 4-1, we could have been 2-3-0 up in that first half. And again, it took some kind of calamitous errors from the goalkeeper again to kind of give Portsmouth the footing in the game, which they needed. Then, you know, you look at games away at the likes of Stevenage as well. You know, so I think it's comforting. I still think I think if you got to 45 points, you'll be safe this year. I think the more games that go that go on and tick on, I think the lower that that points total that you need is. I was originally thinking it was going to be around about 48 points to be safe, but Cheltenham have seemingly dropped off a bit. Fleetwood as well, you know, they're all under a point a game. So I think if you got to 45 points, that might just see you over the line. So a couple more wins, hopefully, and we can hopefully be there.
Yeah. So player wise against the Cobblers, and who do you think is going to be causing us the most problems? Is it a case of Sam Smith? He's got last goals in the last five games. He's quite a streaky player.
Yes.
Had a couple of streaks earlier in the season as well. Wasn't playing against us, I don't think, last time out. Yeah. Who is it that's going to be the one that's the main threat? Because you do spread things around a bit in terms of goal and assist and things, don't you?
Yeah, I think that there's kind of a core of four kind of key players with this Reading team, and it's Lewis Wing, probably top of that tree, midfielder. Kind of if you can stop him playing and spreading the play and kind of dictating the play, then you can have a good chance. Or certainly things will obviously be better. But then you've got Sam Smith up front, link up with Harvey Nibbs, obviously ex-Cambridge as well. But this year he's totally flourished, you know. At Reading, scored, I think it's 9 goals for the season now. And the link up with Sam Smith, I think, has been fantastic so far this year. And then you've got Femi Azeez on the wing. He's been a bit quieter the last few games of late. But again, when he's purring, it's kind of, I guess, or well, it might be big headed to say, but I'd probably say he's one of the better divisions in it, or better players in the division, especially on the wing. You know, he scores goals, he can assist, he's got pace, he's got a couple of tricks. So yeah, they're kind of our four key players, I'd say, that you need to watch out for kind of going forwards. And I think if you can silence Lewis Wing and then Smith as well, then there's real kind of good chances of a good result for you guys at the weekend. But yeah, hopefully Smith can continue his scoring run.
And at the other end as well, goalkeeping situation, obviously David Button had a pretty horrendous time at Sixfields, but it's been replaced last couple of games. Joel Pereira's come in. He did play a few cup games earlier in the season, but he's played your last couple of games. Do you expect that to stay now? Do you expect him to stay to the end of the season? It's number one.
I think so. Yeah. In all honesty, Button only went out of the team originally because he was ill. I think for the Derby game, I think it was. It was a bit of a surprise seeing Joel Pereira in there, because I think everyone just expected David Button to still be in. But I think the stats don't lie about Button. He's not a good goalkeeper. You know, he's the worst in the worst in League One. Sorry, for save percentage. He's got history at his previous clubs of just being a walking calamity. Really. So I think Pereira came and he did well at Derby, made some really good saves, even though we lost that game. I think it was unfortunate, really. The penalty that he gave away was not a penalty because Dwight Gale handled the ball away from him and made some good saves. Well, he made one really crucial double save against Cambridge as well, which was at 2-0, kept us ahead in that game, and obviously didn't let Cambridge back into the tie. I think most fans, or a lot of fans, wanted to see Pereira a few weeks back, just because it was like, well, how much worse can he be than David Button? But yeah, hopefully he'll still be in goal. I think if not, I'd probably fancy Northampton's chances a bit more. I might stick a cheeky bet on Northampton to win if Button's back in goal.
I can imagine a lot of our fans will remember David Button from the first game, so they might give him a little bit of stick if he's coming back towards them. So it's probably best for you guys if you do play Pereira, just so there's not that kind of thing in his head. Other injury suspensions going on for you at the minute?
Andy Yeardham, he got a red card again, just ridiculously against Derby. It was never a red card. It was kind of two yellows that just weren't even yellows, and the second yellow was just the worst dive you'll ever see. He was suspended for 2 games, so he missed Cambridge, and he's also going to miss this game, I believe, as well, following that. So that's a big miss, because obviously he's captain, and he's been fantastic on the right, but Clinton Moeller will probably now slot into that right back slot, and we'll have Jarrell Dorsett at left back. Apart from that, it's been quite a healthy team, which has been something Reading fans haven't said for quite some time. I can't think of any other injuries that are sitting there currently. It's just Andy Yeardham that's the big miss. So you'll see Lewis Wing captain the team in Yeardham's absence, but hopefully that that one absence of Yedden won't be too much of a hindrance.
Good stuff. Expectations then coming into the game for you. I know it's hard for all Reading fans to be thinking or talking about the expectations and predictions and stuff, but what would you expect from a game against us? So obviously we're mid-table, not a lot to play for. Is it a case of you still need the 3 points, you're still expecting the 3 points, or would you take a point from it?
It's an interesting one, because I think if we'd have played you probably a month ago, I probably would have said I would happily take a point. From you guys, but you know, you look at, I guess, the run that Northampton have been on. There's been, you know, comments around, you know, players being on the beach, etc., having nothing to play for. I'd hope we can at least give it a good go and try and get a win. I think that would just give an unbelievable boost for fans, for the players. But I think we've also got to be realistic, I guess, you know, where we are. I certainly wouldn't say no to a point. Ultimately, if we were to get a draw, I'd still say that's a good point. You know, looking at where Northampton are, how good they've been this season as well. Because you know, you've got to credit, you know, how good you guys have been this season to be where you are and kind of solidifying yourself really in League One this season. So if you're to give me a point, I'd be happy, but I'd still want us to see us go and get 3 points.
Yeah, and after that Monday, big trip to Bolton on Easter Monday, home game against a really informed Lincoln after that, and then you go to Bristol Rovers, go to Barnsley and go to Burton before finishing off at home to Blackpool. Difficult fixtures in there for sure. Mm-hmm. Like what do you think? Is it going to go right to the final day? Who do you think is going to be involved? Like, how many points do you think you're going to get to? And do you think you can get to them before that final day comes?
I hope we can. I think a lot of Reading fans are just hoping that, you know, the likes of Cambridge, Burton, the runs that they're on will just continue. It's always hard to obviously say that because, you know, we fell foul of that last year, I guess, you know, with Huddersfield getting out of relegation at our expense last year and going on a crazy run of, I think it was 4 consecutive wins late on in the season. But I think if we can get just a couple more wins, that'll be safety, I think. Even then, if you took away a couple more points, obviously for the suspended deductions that we've got hanging over us. But it's a tough run in. And when it's a tough run in, you kind of look at those games which, you know, you might have gone and thought, oh, I'd take a point there, like potentially Northampton, you think, that's probably one of our better chances now to actually get points and kind of you put more emphasis on it. Realistically, I think for us, we're probably looking at, you know, the Northampton game, the Bristol Rovers game, the Burton games as, I guess, the big ones really, because Bolton away, if you get anything there, you'd be smiling all the way home. Likewise at Barnsley, very erratic team. So it really depends what Barnsley turns up. And then Blackpool on the final day again, you don't really know what's going to happen with them. Are they going to be in the playoff race still? Are they going to be nothing to play for? That's probably why a bit more kind of that I really hope we win on Saturday, not Saturday, Friday, sorry, kind of cranks into it, because it just alleviates the pressure then on those other games going forwards.
Yeah, good stuff. Where should Cobblers fans be eating and drinking then before the game?
If you're coming by train, there's the Three Guineas pub just outside the train station. That's I think a bit of an away day hub, I think, for fans that come to Reading. There's then you can either get the bus or taxis from there to the midday ski. Food wise, there's a place called Blue Collar Street Food or Blue Collar Corner that's just outside the back of Broad Street Mall. It's a big street food place. You've got usually 3-4 street food vendors there that do all sorts of different type of artisan street food. It's really, really good. You can get some alcohol there as well. That's a really good place. It's probably about 15-minute walk from the train station in central Reading. I'd say if you're coming by train and going to the station, we'll be around there. I'd take a look at either of those two.
Lovely stuff. Finally, before we go, then predictions. Could I get a score prediction from you before we go?
Oh, you see, this season, because we've been so bad, I've mostly predicted losses for us. I'm going to say 2-1 Reading. predictions don't really matter at the end of the day, do they? Realistically, yeah, no, they're just a bunch of idiots who just put score lines up. So yeah, I'm going to go 2-1. I'm going to look forward to eating my words when we lose like 6-0 or something on Friday.
Well, we had the opposite effect last weekend. We put a thing on our Twitter page saying asking for predictions, and that everything was 4-0 Derby, 4-0 Derby, 9-0 Derby, 7-0 Derby. So you just
never know. Right.
It's completely up in the air. I think I'll go 1-1 for this one. I'll play it safe.
I'll take a 1-1. I'll take a 1-1.
Yeah, we're shaking it now. Matt, thanks a lot for joining us. Do you want to plug your podcast and the Sell Before We Dive campaign as well?
Yes, so Elm Park Rules podcast at EPR on Twitter. Just your normal kind of fan podcast. We do previews, post matches, interviews. We actually recently did a podcast with the wife of Lewis Wing, which was a really good listen. So if you fancy kind of just seeing a bit of an insight into the life of a footballing partner, go give that a listen, and give us a follow on socials. Obviously, if you want to keep up to date with Reading FC content, and Sell Before We Die, the campaign pressure group for Reading FC fans to get the parasite at the top of the club out. Go give that a follow step to date, share where you can, and fingers crossed we can have a happier conversation next year.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks so much for coming on, Matt. I genuinely wish you all the best for a sale as soon as possible. Get him out your club, and hopefully we can chat again next season with you looking back in the right direction again, and we can have some sort of mid-table battle or something like that. We can battle for 11th and talk about the football even more.
Mid-table mediocrity Reading fans could only dream of at the moment.
After the last. I really hope everything just sorts itself out as soon as possible. I think I echo that. All Cobblers fans. So if Cobblers fans remember 18th minute as well, to don't forget that chant and standing up and joining in and doing whatever we can to help out. Good luck to the Cobblers this weekend, of course, and to NTFC Women. Good luck in firstly getting the game on. We're travelling to Sheffield FC again to try, I think for the third time of asking, to get that game on in the FA Women's National League Division 1 Midlands. We'll be back on Tuesday with all of our reaction to this game, to Monday's game, and to NTFC Women's game on Sunday as well. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next week.
Podcast Network.